This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices, united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
Good times, bad hangovers, and a lot of coffee. Welcome back to another edition of the Dustin McComas Show on theyak.com. This is episode 11. Of course, I am Dustin McComas of the Yak and orangebloods.com, and I'm excited about this one. Speaking of good times, well, at least before kickoff, bad hangovers and a lot of coffee. After my spending the Champions League final at Mr. Tramps with the Austin Spurs, I was definitely hurting the next day. And I'm joined today by Chuck Hoffman, who is – what's your official title? Are you the chairperson? Is that like the official title for the Austin Spurs supporters group?
I think so, yeah.
So you're like the Daniel Levy of the group?
I'm not as smart, but yes.
Oh, don't sell yourself short. Now, I think our man that runs the Spurs went on a little bender in Miami this weekend, but we'll get to some of that discussion. Well, but Chuck Hoffman,
I don't think Daniel Levy gives out as many free beers as I do.
You do give out a lot of free beers. He doesn't strike me as a guy that is going to be buying the bar when he goes out. Just going to have that look about him that, like, he's one of those guys that calculates every single little penny. But Chuck Hoffman, chairperson of the Austin Spurs. We'll call him the Daniel Levy of the group. And Chuck, first of all, thanks for joining me.
You're welcome.
First, a little background about yourself. How long have you been in Austin? What do you do, as much as you can say professionally without giving too much away? When did you come to Austin, and what's kind of your story, more or less?
Yeah, so I moved to Austin in 2006, and my brother was getting a PhD from the University of Texas, and he called me one February, and he said it was 75 degrees and sunny, and back in New Jersey, it was like 34 degrees and raining ice, and I just wasn't very happy living in New Jersey. Like, the weather really got to me, and so that's kind of what made my decision to move down here. And then my brother promised me a few things. And one of the things he promised me was a ticket to the Texas-Ohio State game in like 2007.
Ooh, that was a big one.
Remember? Yeah. And I went to a small liberal arts school in Virginia. And that was like my first ever big time college football game, you know. Up until then, the biggest college football game I went to was the University of Richmond versus William & Mary.
Oh, so you went from the bottom to the top real quick in terms of football experience.
Yeah. Yeah. And so the game was a lot of fun. And then I also love live music, and that's another major reason why I moved to Austin. Those two things contributed to my decision to move to Austin.
Yeah, and so what are you telling your brother on a day like today when it's like 101 degrees outside? Like, are you still okay with that? Because it's, you know, the winter's not going to be as bad as New Jersey winter.
Yeah, my brother actually lives in Stillwater, Oklahoma now. So it's like just as hot and then even worse in the winter. Yeah, yeah, and it's Stillwater.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there's that going for you too. But yeah, I feel like once you get as north as Dallas, you kind of get into that region where you might get four seasons, but you might get like tornadoes, ice, snow, hail, 110 degree temperature. Like, I don't know if I could ever handle that.
My other major solution is, I'm a teacher, or I'm in education. And, my other major solution is, like, last weekend I was in, or 2 weeks ago I was in the North Woods of Wisconsin, and it was like 65 degrees.
Oh yeah. They've had a great, summer college baseball league, the North Woods League. And I understand why they play up there. I mean, it's gotta be a treat for them to go play in that weather in that area.
I know you're like, this is a very quick aside. I know you're a big college baseball guy. Have you ever been to like a Cape Cod League game?
I have not. I know all about it, but I've unfortunately never, like, I've gone to that area, but like I haven't gone when I'm able to go watch those games.
Gotcha. I mean, because I think – I know it's wood bat, so it's like it's interesting to see college players with a wooden bat.
Yeah, yeah. It's a big – not to get too sidetracked, but it's like scouts love it because they'll go see guys swing the wood bat. So you kind of get a better feel for – can this guy really hit as well as his numbers may indicate with the metal bat? So it's by far the most talented collegiate summer league. I have visions of everybody running around like Jessica Biel, like that movie Fever Pitch. I don't know if that's true or not. I'm guessing it's not. But
I think you got the name of the movie wrong, by the way.
What is it? Oh no, Fever Pitch was the
summer
one.
Catch.
Yeah, Summer Catch.
Yeah.
Pitch is the one.
Fever
Pitch. The Red Sox fan, isn't it?
Yeah, and then the book is based on the Scum.
Yeah, that's right. Summer Catch, that's right. But yeah, I just have visions of her in the pool. Very memorable pool scene. Well, speaking of sports, what got you into Spurs? I like that segue there.
That's a great question. It also involves the state of Massachusetts. My cousin Ted, he got married Labor Day weekend 2007. And so I'm mentioning the date because it's important for a few reasons. But one of my cousins at the time, she was dating a guy that was from London, and he was a Spurs fan or Spurs supporter, excuse me. and right around that time, I had just read the Bill Simmons article. I'm not sure if you're aware of this.
That's when that came out. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And so, you know, I brought it up to him because, like, I always knew about soccer, and like, you know, I was always watched the World Cup, the American national team, stuff like that. And I had like kind of, you know, I'd watched in college, half of my friends were on the soccer team. And, so we would have this thing called Beach Week. It was in between the last class or last final and graduation. It was a week off, and it always landed that, second week of the Champions League semifinals. So like our house that we stayed at became the huge party spot. Like anyone that wanted to watch those two matches on the Tuesday and the Wednesday would come to our place, and we would grill out and have a few beers, and it was a lot of fun. And so like I knew of that, but I didn't know about all the inner workings of, you know, European leagues and stuff like that. So you know, I got to talking to him, and I brought up the article, and he's like, oh, that's the team I support. And I'm like, oh, wow. And so when he sold me on other things, and this is really critical, like I'm a Mets fan and a Jets fan. And he compared Spurs to the Mets and the Jets. And this is 2007, right when the Mets were in the midst of blowing that huge lead to the Phillies.
Oh yeah,
I'm not sure if you remember that.
Yeah.
But the night of the wedding, I think the guy's name was John Main. He was the pitcher, and he like pitched a gem, and the Mets staved off elimination. And then the next day, driving back from Western Massachusetts to Newark Airport, I listened to the last game of the season where Tom Glavine, I think he gave up like 9 runs in the first inning.
Oof.
My father almost drove off the road. He was so upset.
That was definitely Tom Glavine at the very end of his career.
Correct. Yeah. And, you know, I think that was kind of fitting. That was the day I decided that I'm going to be a Tottenham fan in terms of like being like, our supporter in terms of like the day I realized that I really was all in on Tottenham was, I think it was 2011. It was the game against Manchester City. It was on a Monday afternoon, and Spurs, if they won, they would go through the Champions League. And what's his name? Kabul put in a cross to Peter Crouch that he headed in, and Spurs won the match. And I remember going crazy that day. And I think the game was on ESPN, so you had Ian Dark calling the match, and it was, you know, like that was like the culminating thing, and that definitely put it over the top. Like now I'm like all in on this. And then the subsequent year, 2011 to 2012, you know, I really watched like every match as much as possible with Fox Soccer, and really got into the Champions League run and Gareth Bale and all those awesome goals against Inter Milan.
I don't know if you had to deal with some of the questions I dealt with. Like, I feel like, you know, I got into Spurs around the same time you did, and then kind of got more intensively into it. Probably like 2013, maybe even 2014. Okay. But I went to London for spring break when I was in college, which I think was 2007. And I had a couple of buddies over there. And one of them, both of them were huge into soccer. And he's like, hey, you let's go to this pub. They got a match on. Let's go watch it. And I'll never forget, Berbatov scored a goal. And the bartender just lost his mind. I mean, he was cussing all match. He was like slamming things. I'm like, if this bartender is this into this, like, I need to be, this is cool. Like, he's cussing at the TV. Like, I mean, this is serious business. And I was like, at that point, I was like, okay, like, I'm going to try to follow this team. But like, I feel like when you would tell people, you know, back around 2008, 9, 10, hey, I'm a Spurs fan or supporter, they'd be like, oh, you're just picking the Bill Simmons thing, huh? Like, you know, it's like, no, I have like a legit reason. Like, this is my squad. I don't need to, like, you know, like, well, you're the American jumping on the American bandwagon for the Spurs. And it's like, yeah, let me tell you, like, I've researched the history. A lot of W's are just
really not a band.
Pull up the train behind.
It's really not a bandwagon, though. Like, the Simmons piece, the whole premise was he had three things that he wanted. The number one was the only city he wanted to go to in England was London. So if you're gonna get on a plane to go, you know, if you're gonna get on a plane to go to a match, why would you want to go to Stoke, you know, or something like that?
Fair point.
And then his second thing was he didn't want a team that would get relegated. So I mean, Spurs have never been relegated out of the Premier League. The last time they were relegated was in the 70s, you know. And so he didn't want that. But then at the same time, I mean, this was in the height of his whole Yankees were like the evil empire kind of thing. Actually, I think by that point, the Red Sox had already won one.
Yeah, they had.
But his whole thing was, you know, you can't pick the Yankees. So, like, Manchester United was out, stuff like that. So.
Yeah. It just like, it's like some people treated that as, I feel like I encountered some people that had like a very hipsterish thing with Spurs, like, oh, I liked him before you did, or I liked him for other people started. It's like, come on, like, this is clearly like an evolution we're seeing in America where people are like getting very, very into the Premier League. So Austin Spurs, that started when, like, 2012 2000?
Correct.
Like, how did that process start?
Yeah, so it was five people and I was one of the five. And so my friend at the time, his name's Alex, and He I would play golf with him once a week, and he and I would watch Spurs with him. He was a Spurs fan, and he just saw, hey man, there's this thing on Reddit that a couple people are meeting up for the North London Derby. Do you wanna go? I'm like, yeah, let's go. So we went to a bar. It's called Quattro's. It's no longer there. At the time, it was one of two bars in Austin that would open for matches, and it was a Chelsea pub and a Scum pub. And we went there for the North London Derby, and the other three guys I met are, you know, really good friends of mine now. And, you know, that was the first day I met them. And so between the five of us, we like shotgunned a few beers in the parking lot. We snuck a few beers in and coffee cups into the bar. It was the kickoff was Sunday at 7:30 in the morning. So for the match, Spurs went up 2-0. And ended up losing 5-2. Probably just like very, yeah. And then it's like, you know, for people that are listening, it's like the combination of the Yankees versus the Red Sox or Texas versus Texas A&M when they actually played football against one another. So yeah, it was a lot of fun. And like, you know, met those guys. And from there, we've like slowly built a group. And by the end of the year, we had convinced Mr. Tramps to like start opening up for us. One of the guys, his name's Quinn. He was one of the first five founding members. He had a relationship with the bar and convinced them to open for us. And that's where we've been ever since.
The next time I have some beers, I'm going to have to pour one out for Quattro's. Cause that opened when I lived in West Campus, like three blocks from there. And, you know, I remember they would open up really early for like World Cup matches. And it was just, cause you'd get the diehard of the diehard.
That's where I watched the Landon Donovan Algeria goal.
I might have been there too. I'm pretty sure I was there as well because I literally live on 26th and Leon, like two blocks away. And like we would always go there for the World Cup stuff just because it was like the soccer bar. I loved it because it was, they'd always open early, but like the people, the fans that would show up, like there was a, you'd see like older gentlemen that were clearly professionals going downtown for, you know, whatever business job or whatever. Yeah. And they'd like bring their gear. Like there was a guy that was a Dutch fan and he'd have those, what are those like wooden shoes that Dutch people wear?
I think they're like clogs.
Yeah. He had a pair of them. So he opens up the trunk of his car and he's like, you know, he puts his orange jersey on and he gets a pair of those shoes and he's like, just, it's like 6 or 7:30 in the morning. And then once the match ends.
Yeah, because it's in South Africa.
Yeah. Yeah. Once the match ends, he just goes and opens the trunk, takes the shirt off, throws it in there, puts his suit on, and then drives to work after having a few beers. Like, I don't know how that place didn't survive. Maybe it was a little before its time because I feel like that was like
the owner was a terrible person.
Oh, really? Well, that'll do it.
Yeah.
That'll do it. Because the concept was great. Like, it was like the soccer bar before there were soccer bars in Austin. Besides, like, Fido, which has been a staple and things like that.
The person that was responsible for that, the guy's name is Jens, and he is he's the chairman of the Austin Blues, the Chelsea group.
Uh-huh.
You know, other than his taste in English Premier League soccer teams, he's a great guy. And he was, you know, he's kind of like the guy that is like the godfather of Austin supporter clubs. Like he was one of the first people to get places to open up and he's really instrumental in that. And now like he owns a percentage of the Haymaker. That's why the Chelsea group watches there. Yeah.
That guy's
a really good guy. And he's like super, super influential. You know, before we started Austin Spurs, like I would go, I had a friend who was also a Mets fan and he picked Chelsea primarily because it was in the midst of the Bernie Madoff scandal. So I'm not sure if you know this, but the Mets ownership was heavily invested in Bernie Madoff.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I remember that.
And that explains the whole Bobby Bonilla thing. Do you know, like, the whole Bobby Bonilla thing, right? July 1st, every year, the Mets pay Bobby Bonilla.
Still getting paid today. You know, it's like everybody's going to get paid Bobby Bonilla next 20 years.
Yeah, well, the Mets didn't want to like buy out his contract for at the time it was $5 million, but because they had all their money invested in Bernie Madoff, they were actually making more and they just thought that would continue. So that's the whole Bobby Bonilla thing is tied to Bernie Madoff. But long story short, my buddy, he picked Chelsea because he wanted a team that would just spend out their mistakes and just continually spend money and not care. So he wasn't looking for the Mets in like an English Premier League soccer team.
Oh yeah.
But long story short, like he was the one that kind of introduced me to the culture of the Austin Blues and like how they kind of did things. And he was the one that sort of like, he's like, you should do this for Tottenham. That'd be cool. So yeah, that's kind of like the founding of our group and stuff.
What's it been like to see just the growth of the group? And, you know, from a singular aspect of just specifically to the Austin Spurs, but also the growth of like these groups in Austin, because I feel like, you know, I can even rattle off, you mentioned Haymaker. I knew that was the Chelsea bar. You know, there's, I think it's BD Riley's and Mueller. That's a big Liverpool bar. Like, you know, there's these known places in Austin, which, and this has just happened over the last probably, you know, 6-7 years. What's it been like for you? Because you're kind of in a unique position to see the growth of Austin Spurs and also the growth of these types of groups and just, you know, soccer interest in general in Austin.
I think it has a few things. First of all, I think Austin's like top 10 in the country in terms of like any major soccer game. Like we'll get the top 10 rating. You know, like we're in there with Washington, D.C., which is an extremely international city. So like there are going to be a lot of like, you know, international people watching there, but like we're on par like the Women's World Cup did amazing numbers here and stuff like that. In terms of like what I think the major growth of soccer in Austin has to do with like Austin's always embraced counterculture. Austin is a pretty drunk city. So like starting drinking beer at 7 a.m. on a Saturday is kind of like, you know, that's like a norm. And then I think another major thing is NBC. So, you know, it used to be the games were on Fox Soccer and you had to, first of all, you had to have Fox Soccer, which was like above the tier for like most cable packages. And then there's something called Fox Soccer Plus. So like for us, a Saturday 9 a.m. match, the game would be on Fox Soccer, but then Tottenham was usually on either Plus or they weren't on at all. And it was like a live, they would replay it later on like tape delay. So the match would be final, but you'd be watching it like 2 o'clock in the afternoon. So NBC changed that with what they did. And so now you can watch, you know, every match as it's happening, no matter what team you support. So I think that's really cool.
Yeah. And I appreciate too that like, they don't like, they know they're like broadcasting for an American audience, but they don't treat us like idiots. You know, like I'll never forget watching the Gold Cup where Argentina was playing US in the final a couple of years ago. And yeah, like the people on set were just like extreme homers. Like, oh, you know, the U.S., like, I think they're underdogs, they're going to win, and this and that, and just, like, treating us like idiots. And it's like, no, like, I give, you know, the soccer crowd in Austin credit. Like, these people are into it. You know, this isn't just, like you said,
yeah,
there's a dedication. Like, you show up, like, on a Saturday at 7 a.m., and the beers are cracking, or in some cases, the shots are flowing, too. Like, if it's an especially big match, but it's just, it's been incredible to see both the growth, but also too just the heavy interest. Like you said, the Women's World Cup ratings, I think Austin was number one, like throughout the entire thing. And, you know, of course, you know, Austin FC coming. So like, how would you describe the Austin Spurs group? Because I think it's got a little bit of everything. You know, I feel like I hear some English, some British accents at times, and you know, you know, how would you describe the group?
Well, I'll do that in a sec. I forgot the other real big thing that I think what makes soccer like such a unique sport is, to me, soccer is like the best sport to watch with other people. You know, like, cause there's so much nuance going on and people can have different opinions of like the same thing. With most American sports, everything is really cut and dry, you know? And so I think that's something that's completely unique for soccer. In terms of like the Austin Spurs group, like we're a very, very diverse group in terms of, you know, we've got people that are like bartenders. And then like my friend Alex, one of the founding members, he was like a nuclear physicist. So, you know, it's quite an eclectic group and, you know, everyone has that one common bond. The thing I like the most about Austin Spurs is, it's a lot. Now, most of the people in the group have become my friends, and I would say a major component of my friend group is Austin Spurs. I really like Austin as a city, but I think one of the biggest negatives to Austin is that it can be a very transient place. And I'm sure, Dustin, you've experienced a lot of people that have, you know, lived in Austin and moved out.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, especially like, so you're a UT grad and then you live here. So, you know, I'm sure a lot of your friends from college might have stuck around for a few years and then they get an opportunity somewhere else, or, you know, they want to move home or this or that, life happens. And that definitely happened with me right around the time, you know, Austin Spurs was founded. A lot of my friends in Austin were moving out. And so like for me personally, Austin Spurs fills a huge void in terms of social interaction and stuff like that.
Yeah, so. And it's not just a group that shows up to Mr. Tramps and drinks a bunch of Lone Star. What I found was very cool is you guys are also active in other ways as well. I mean, it's not just, you know, it's a group that gets together primarily to have a good time and watch soccer matches and support their group. But you guys do a lot of stuff away from that as well.
You're part of it too.
Yeah, I know. I still kind of view myself as a definite rookie. I've got like a season and a half of Tramp's appearances under my belt. But like, you know, that's like when you guys would announce things like, hey, so-and-so is having a birthday party, like we're getting a bus and we're going down to this brewery, or, you know, we're going to do this, you know, we're going to do this activity out in the community. Like that's unique. I think, you know, it's beyond just a, hey, let's have some beers and watch the match and then go on our separate ways type of thing.
Yeah. I think a lot of it has to do with like, we, you know, as we've grown, we've realized that like, maybe Austin Spurs should be more about just the 2 hours at the bar. And, you know, that's morphed into a couple of different things. One thing that we've tried to do as a club is, and a big push for us this year is, we're going to try and do a monthly happy hour. So once a month, somewhere around town, you know, we'll get together. And, you know, our bar is in North Central Austin. And, but, you know, people live all over. So we've picked a few bars. You know, the first bar I think we did this summer was Little Darlin, which is, you know, really South Austin. So, you know, we're trying to reach out in that sense. The other thing that we're definitely going to try and do this year is pick a charity or two, or service project to, you know, participate in. And one that we've done in the past was the Central Texas Food Bank. And, you know, they do great work. And, you know, we'd show up, I think it was on a Tuesday night from 6:30 to 8:30. And, you know, you sort some, I've sorted melons and tomatoes. And one time we did, bags for stews. So it was like cabbage and onions and carrots. And you just stand around and then we just, you know, talk to one another about like our week and then what we think about the match and all these other kind of things coming up. So, that, you know, those have been a lot of fun. And then, the things that I'm most proud of is, what we did for Hurricane Harvey. So that was 2 years ago now.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. And so one of the things that's really cool about me and like in terms of my position is, we have a Twitter feed and I think we have, I don't know, 3,000 to 4,000, followers, but you know, from that, most of the people that I follow are people that run accounts in other cities. And, you know, I remember, during Hurricane Harvey, there were two like vivid memories for me. The first was, you know, as it was going down, a couple of us were drinking beer at somebody's house. And, my friend Tolga was like, when it made landfall in Rockport.
Yeah.
It was like the eye of the storm. And he's like, that's my hometown. And we're watching like somebody's Twitter Periscope feed and his town is like, you know, he was like really shook, you know, and, just seeing things being swept away. And, you know, for him, things that were like iconic landmarks of his childhood are like, you know, going into the ocean or something. And that same night, one of my friends, Chris, he was the guy that said, you know, I'm going to get my tools together and go out and help people. And, Chris's heart was definitely in the right place, but like, he really didn't have like a plan or know of what to do. So that night over a few beers, like we came up with, like, we should do something. And, you know, I was over the next couple of days, I was like direct messaging with the guy, his name's Jason. He runs the Houston Spurs and he lives out in like, I think Katy, which is like west of Houston. And, he was like giving me live updates about the water level in his neighborhood. And I was just, it was so surreal.
Yeah. And to put that in perspective, like Katy is, you know, I grew up in Northwest Houston and Katy is like, it's far outside of this downtown
Correct.
Houston. It just gives you like the idea of the scope of like how much the water was just everywhere.
Well, I saw a map where somebody did like the affected area and then they superimposed the state of Connecticut over that. And Hurricane Harvey was essentially like the disaster area of Hurricane Harvey was the size of the state of Connecticut, which is just surreal.
Yeah. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. Well, long story short, we're like, okay, let's do something in Houston. And I'm extremely good at like organizing and getting people to do things. And that night, my friend Chris and my friend Yitzhak, they're both, Yitzhak's a Finnish carpenter. He's had work that's been in like Architectural Digest. And Chris is like a handyman, and he was also like in a former career, he was a insurance adjuster, which is going to come into play in a sec. But, you know, we're like, okay, let's do something. Like, let's get a crew of people together. We can like hang drywall or something. And it turned out the owner of our bar, he had an uncle that lived in around Friendswood, which is southeast Houston. And or is it Friendswood or Friendship? I think it's Friendswood.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so we found out that he had water damage in his house. And so we're like, great. The guy's name is Uncle Dennis. Like, we'll help Uncle Dennis. So, you know, I organized things and did some research, put together a GoFundMe account. And then I sent an email to Tottenham. And I said, hey, listen, like, can you promote our GoFundMe? And can you help us out? And like, I would like to, for the GoFundMe, I'd like to raffle off a signed jersey or signed kit for anyone that could help out. And then maybe we can also get one for the Houston Spurs bar, you know, to put in their bar. And, you know, they came back to me and they said, we can't publicize the GoFundMe, because then we'd have to publicize everyone's GoFundMe, but we can contact NBC and NBC Sports. And so the following weekend, the match was 11:30. It was against Swansea, and the match was actually on regular NBC. So like over the air, and you know, about 30 minutes in the match, the play-by-play announcer's name's Arlo White. He announced that, you know, he brought up JJ Watt, and then he brought up the Houston floods, and then he brought up what we were doing. And he mentioned that we were getting together with our friends in Houston and our friends from San Antonio to go out to Houston for a weekend and, you know, help people out. And he mentioned that, you know, we were going to start by watching the match at 6:30 in the morning at the bar with Houston Spurs. And then at like 9 o'clock, we're going to go out in the community. And then that night around 7 o'clock, or like we went to, Eighth Wonder Brewing, which is a great brewery in Houston.
Yes, it is. Yeah, very.
And then, yeah. And then at 7 o'clock, we went to the Houston Dynamo match, and the Houston Dynamo gave us, you know, tickets for like $15, and Eighth Wonder gave us three or four beers for $10. And so they cut us all these breaks. And, you know, from that, like 25 people said that they would come across those three different groups. So we had all that buy-in. Members of Houston Spurs put people up in their houses. So no one had to shell out for a hotel or anything like that. Plus, I know at the time hotels were in really high demand in Houston. So, you know, we went out and, we, you know, that was the plan. And at the time we had like $700 in the account. We had budgeted it out. Like, that's this much drywall. We'll be able to help out Uncle Dennis. Within 24 hours, we had over $5,000.
Wow.
In our account. And from that, we then found another family. My friend Yitzhak, I was staying with his friends from Houston, and his friend, she's a nurse, you know, and he's like, hey, can you reach out to any of your friends that might have been affected? And, you know, someone that just needs drywall put up, like, you know. And we found a single mother. She was in her 60s. She lived really close to Houston Hobby Airport. And, you know, her home was flooded, and she had raised three daughters. And all of them had like gone on to careers like nursing and other things. And so we were able to help her. And then a few months later, we went to Rockport. We helped like a friend of a friend there. And that one was really crazy because, you know, Rockport like hadn't recovered at all. And we ended up gutting a house, helping this guy out. And then a few months after that, we went to LaGrange, which is like halfway between Austin and Houston. And in LaGrange, we ended up helping two families there. And we ended up spending most of our money. What was really cool in LaGrange is one family, you know, I called up, there's a disaster relief coordinator for LaGrange, and I called him up and I explained who we were as a group, and, you know, that we had money and we were willing to help. And we had some people that had some skill sets and stuff like that. And he's like, oh, that's great. I have this family that I put in a house, but they have a chain link fence that overlooks a railroad railroad tracks, and then over that is a cemetery. And then it just so happens that their teenage son is on the soccer team at LaGrange High School. So we ended up building a fence for them so that, you know, their house then became a home.
Yeah.
And that's something like, you know, FEMA's not going to pay for a fence. But, you know, with all the money that we raised, we were able to pay, and buy a fence. And we were a couple dollars short at the end. And I called up my friend Mort, who runs Milwaukee Spurs, and he gave us another $600 so that we had everything covered. And we were able to, build the fence. And at the end, we had some extra materials. And I just donated them back to, the town of LaGrange. The other home that we helped was a really amazing house. It was built in the 1880s. And this house was 5 feet off the ground. And inside the house on the first floor, they had 3 feet of water damage.
Jeez.
So that means the floods were like 8 to 9 feet.
Yeah.
And this home was made out of, it was all custom wood built in the 1880s. So my friend Yitzhak, the Finnish carpenter, he was like, he's always told me, like, no home built after 1980 is any good. Like, that's his, like, thing as a, you know, they don't make homes like they used to kind of guy. So when he found out this home was built in the 1880s, he was, like, all for it. So what he ended up doing was he actually, and this is, like, something that's priceless, he went around the house and all of the molding that got warped from the, all the molding had to be thrown out from this house. He spent the entire day remaking their molding and just milling it for them and like getting it to be a pretty much exact match.
That's incredible that he could go in there with that kind of skill and just match it.
Yeah. And then the other thing that was really cool. So he was working with this guy, Tanner. Tanner at the time was Houston Spurs. He now is the guy that he founded Bloomington, Indiana Spurs. And so this guy, Tanner, and his, I think now wife, they were there and they were like, we're going to buy a home eventually. We're actually learning this incredible woodworking skill. And, they helped out there. I think so Yitzhak did all the wood. His business partner, John, put in a door. Like this family was unable to lock their house because their door had warped. And, this is like 5 months after the storm.
Right.
And then Tanner, his wife, and then Tyler from Austin Spurs, they like retiled a bathroom or something. It was like a really cool experience. And that's something I'm super proud of as a group, that we did that.
Yeah. And rightfully so. And kind of puts in perspective just the sheer, like the size of that destruction. Like you mentioned Rockport and LaGrange and, Katy and Friendswood, like, it wasn't just, kind of one little area. I mean, it was, I'll never forget, I'm a huge weather nerd. Like I follow it all the time. I took weather classes at Texas and I just remember following all the models and the projections. And then when it hit Rockport, I was like, this is going to be bad. And I just, my grandparents, my mom still lived in Houston. It was just like hourly checkups. Like, where's the water? Where's the water now? Like,
yeah.
Unfortunately.
And yeah.
Unfortunately, really they were crazy, there in like, an area that they wasn't, they got lucky. But I was like, you didn't, like, so many, like, I don't know if some of those areas have even fully recovered years later.
Yeah, so, like, the Uncle Dennis, the first home that we helped, when I got there, he explained his story. So he was fine the day after the storm. What ended up happening was, his home was built in, like, the late 70s, early 80s. And at the time, they were the highest that his development was the highest land in the area. But then another development came in and they got higher. And then the Walmart came in and they wanted higher. And then the, strip mall that had a Papa John's in it came in and they wanted their land higher. So then he was the lowest in the area. And so essentially the pumps broke after 2 days. And that's when his home flooded.
Oh, geez.
So it was like, which is like a, and I still remember it. I showed up and within 5 minutes, the guy's hugging it out with me in, crying. He's like, I can't believe you're here. And we had 15 guys in his house. His house was completely gutted out. from like 4 feet down. All the drywall, all the drywall from 4 feet down was out. All the insulation was taken out. There were a couple guys, like I had to make two stops that day from the bar. I was driving the big truck. And, by the time I got there, everyone had loaded some insulation into their cars to just start with the process. When I got there, the whole house had been insulated within like 45 minutes. And like everyone's ready. All right, let's get the drywall out. And then, we started putting drywall out. And then by like 11:30, people are drinking Lone Star. And, it was a good day. It was incredible.
Yeah.
That's
awesome. Well, for those people that are listening that are unfamiliar with Austin Spurs, and maybe they're a Spurs fan supporter, or they're kind of getting into the Premier League, what's the best way to contact Austin Spurs? Like, whether it's Twitter, Facebook, whatever.
Yeah. So, it's also really funny because the San Antonio Spurs, is it the G League now?
Oh, the Austin Spurs. The Austin Spurs. Yeah, I know. If you Google Austin Spurs, unfortunately, the soccer supporter group is not the first thing that comes up, because I'm a Rockets fan.
Correct,
I don't like the San Antonio Spurs.
All right. Yeah. And so, when I actually watched the NBA team that I grew up rooting for was the New York Knicks, and they lost to the Spurs in 1999, but they haven't been good since. Whatchamacallit? So our Twitter handle is at Austin Spurs, and then our email is austinspurs@gmail.com. So those are the best two ways to contact us. I would say that anytime Tottenham is playing, you can show up to Mr. Tramps. That's our bar. They've shown every match for the last 7 years.
Wow.
Except for there was one match where it was a 6 a.m. Sunday match after Thanksgiving. And that's the only match in the last 7 years they haven't broadcast, or they haven't opened up for. They've actually opened up for matches that haven't been on TV. Back when the FA Cup wasn't on TV for the third and fourth round and fifth round matches, we would go and we would have them stream it on the internet radio. And that's how, I'm not sure, are you aware of our whole Suits thing?
Of the what?
For the FA
Cup?
That's where it started, because if you go back and Google, people would listen to the radio in full suits in the 50s and 60s. And so that's how we ripped that off. We're if we're going to show up to the bar, to not even watch this, might as well go as absolute, insane as possible and wear suits. Yeah. So we wear suits for the FA Cup. That's one of our things.
One of the many traditions, I feel like every time I go, especially if my wife comes with me, we always leave with either a new scarf or a t-shirt, every single time.
Yeah. I love designing t-shirts.
Yeah, and they're awesome too. I've got the one, when England was in the World Cup and Eric Dyer hit that penalty kick, I put on the Eric Dyer and
I love Eric Dyer,
Dele Alli one, and she's got the one with the MySpace Dele Alli shirt. I gotta say, I think that the greatest one I've ever seen, besides the classic, just the Austin Spurs classic shirt, is the Danny Rose with the Lone Star.
Yeah.
That's the pinnacle right there. That is outstanding.
Yeah. So, after Spurs won the Champions League semifinal, incredible comeback, Danny Rose was drinking Heineken, which is the official Champions League beer. So we just subbed that out for a Lone Star, and that was the only thing we did. Yeah, that one blew up. And I knew from my experience, especially with the Dele Alli one, was you need to strike while the iron's hot with some of those shirts.
Right.
Because, after we lost the Champions League, I knew that no one else would want that shirt. So, there was a more than 50% chance that shirt was a one day only shirt.
Yeah.
And it got a lot of love on social media and stuff.
Oh, it was awesome. Well, fortunately for us, Harry Kane was not a one season wonder. So the season's coming up. I'm still adjusting to life as a Spurs fan, where the transfer period window is exciting. They actually made some really key acquisitions that should really help the squad. It's like you go from crickets last year in transfer window time to this year, where it's like Dybala and Coutinho and all these other guys. What's your general thought or prediction about the upcoming season, which begins Saturday, 11:30 a.m. At Mr. Tramps?
Yeah, so I go on Twitter and I rarely tweet things from the Austin Spurs account. It's usually just either concert lyrics, a concert that I'm at. Like, I've been known to do that after a few Lone Stars. And then, match reminders and stuff. But, like, all these people were losing their mind for 5 weeks. And, like, we need to sign these guys and stuff. And people really freaked out. At the end, I think we did pretty well. I'm really, really happy with the Tenge Ndombele. I think that's how his name is pronounced.
I think you're right. Yeah.
This guy is just like a tank. And, if he could be half as good as Paul Pogba or Patrick Vieira, it's just going to be incredible. It's really fun to watch him play because he does not give up the ball.
Right.
And that's a very key attribute to have in soccer. And it always seems like he's looking to go forward with the ball in terms of passing. And in our midfield, that's something that we've definitely lacked over the last few years, especially after Moussa Dembele left. He would always be our person moving the ball forward. And I think Tanguy Ndombele has a lot of the attributes that Moussa Dembele has. And I'm really, really excited to see him play. The other three players that we signed, for Lo Celso, I've watched, just like anyone, you watch YouTube clips, but I always am hesitant to look at someone on YouTube and say, oh, they're great. I think it's really important to watch like full match highlights of someone. And for Lo Celso, I watched a few of his, like every touch he had against Real Madrid last year. He looked really good. And so I feel like there's a very good chance that he will replace Christian Eriksen, and that, the transfer window is closed in terms of buying players, but Spurs could still sell players.
Yeah. It's such a weird window now, like the Premier League.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't really like it.
I don't either.
And we could come back to that in a sec, but I think there's a very good chance that Christian Eriksen will be sold in the next 3 weeks, which is very disappointing to, I think he's a great player, and he'll be sorely missed if he is sold. But he only has a year left on his deal. So for people that don't know much about how soccer works, if you leave, you could leave as a free agent. They call it leaving on a free. That means that the team that has you doesn't get any kind of compensation. And in European leagues, what teams typically try to do is sell a player before they lose their value. And it appears that I would say that it's probably likely that Spurs sell Christian Eriksen.
And when you say compensation, some of these amounts of money that fly around are just...
Oh, it's incredible, right?
It reminds me of, when Spurs was kind of first building up towards what it is now, and some of the money they made on some guys that they sold. Like, if you do it the right way, and the club's at the point now where you don't want to lose a Christian Eriksen because he's a terrific player, and you're at the point now where you're competing for league titles and Champions League and all those things. It's not the time to lose those players, but if you spend that money the right way, you could potentially get, some guys that could turn into a Christian Eriksen years down the road, which is what Tottenham did pretty well a few years ago.
Yeah, so Christian Eriksen was one of the players they bought with the Gareth Bale money.
Right.
And the only guy left from that would also be Lamella. But, like, Christian Eriksen was kind of an afterthought. I think he was only bought for between 10 and 15 million. And at the time, it was considered a steal. So the other two players they bought are both very young. One is going to be left back on loan to the team he was with. And I've seen him play a little bit, but it's really important for Tottenham to sign English players because they need to compete in Champions League. You need to start a certain number of homegrown players So any player that is English is considered homegrown. And so that really gives Spurs an advantage when they, you know, when you play in the Premier League and then also in European competition. So I really think Sun Yung could be really good. I remember 2 years ago, he played for Fulham when they were getting promoted, and he really tore it up.
He was awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. And then last year they got promoted. They had three different managers, and I think he was kind of hurt and stuff. So
yeah,
I really expect big things. He's only 19 too.
Right. And so, I mean, the pace is just incredible, which,
yeah,
you know, is something I think Spurs could use more of. But yeah, you know, I was looking back, so he had that dynamite season that you were referring to in this past one, Fulham, which is kind of a mess. But, you know, he played left wing, he played right wing, he played left mid, he played a little left back. He kind of played everywhere, but I think that eventually he'll settle in to kind of be that, hopefully that new, just, you know, left back at Spurs that's going to be for a long time. And you know, they've done a pretty good job at developing their fullbacks the last few years, and his talent is definitely there. But you know, it probably gives them some flexibility too, from you know, what kind of lineup or what kind of, you know, tactics they choose to use when you have a guy like that. But yeah, I think that was a good bang for the buck based on, you know, he's a 19-year-old with that kind of talent. You know, usually guys seem to be a little bit more expensive.
Well, he's also – so he was in the last year of his deal at Fulham. So it was really the last opportunity for that team to cash in on him. Very similar situation to what Christian Eriksen's going through right now with us. So, you know, that's why we were able to kind of jump on that and get him.
Yeah.
The thing that I think is the craziest thing about the transfer window is the you know, the there are two positions or two players that I wish we would have got. One of those – you mentioned fullbacks. I mean – Tottenham really doesn't have an answer at right back. And, you know, a lot of people are extremely upset that we didn't sign a right back. And I'm not sure. I mean, I think they'll give Kyle Walker-Peters a really good shot at it. And then they have a young Argentinian kid named Juan Foyt they might put there. So we'll see between those two. But I know we were talking back and forth before the leading up to the podcast the last couple of days, and the Paula Diabla rumors. I mean, oh, that would have been incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know, it's one thing, like with my background as a guy that's, you know, writer, reporter on sports, like it's maddening to follow the transfer window, because it's like, you know, I feel like Walter Sobchak in The Big Lebowski. Like, does anybody give a shit about the rules? Like, it's just misinformation and rumors. And it's like, what is real? What is not? So, like, all the Paulo Dybala stuff was coming down. I'm like, is this real? Like, what's going on?
There's for an American sports example, there's no Woj. There's no Buster Olney. You know, like those. There's no, like, I guess I'm not sure Peter Gammons is breaking news anymore, but like those are the people that you would like trust. Like, you know, there's no Jake Glazer. You know, like, those guys are so like in tune with their sources and know so many things. But you know, European soccer, it's more than one league in one country, and there are all these sort of crazy things that go on.
And the different languages too. You know, you've got the Italian press and the Spanish press and the English and all these sorts of things. Like, I was trying to translate what the Italian press was saying about Dybala, and then, you know, no, and then you get – once I learned about the image rights issue, I started to temper my expectations a little bit. But,
which is just insane.
I know. Like, it doesn't
– I don't even understand how that works. Like, I was joking with friends that, you know, Daniel Levy might be the first person to figure out how to do and get away with image rights. Like, it would have been incredible if Spurs signed the guy and then had a pixelated picture of him with the kit. You know, I was just like thinking of this, like, you know, Levy hardline negotiating with these image rights people. Apparently it's his former agent owns his likeness and can like profit off of this, and apparently it's worth up to £40 million a year.
Oh my gosh.
And so that's like the latest article I read before I jumped on with you. They were explaining this. My joke was going to be, and the Premier League, you can't — there are no image rights in England. So that's like a big thing. Like, that's part of the reason why, like, somebody like Gareth Bale made so much money at Real Madrid. It's because he then controlled his image rights. So, like, my vague understanding of image rights means, like, if you're on, like, the program, it means you get a cut of the program.
Right.
For that week. Yeah. I was just dreaming up ways that Levy could go about making sure that, you know, like, have Dybala, like, train in, like, a mask. Or have him wear, like, a fake mustache like Bobby Valentine.
Yeah, man.
And so like get around image rights that way or something, you know, like the Humpty Dance guy, you know, with, like, the big nose and, like, the glasses or something like that. Yeah. I think it would just been hysterical to, like, you know, Daniel Levy hardline negotiating with image rights people.
Because he's an incredible talent, you know, and I was looking back at the 2016.
And it also, like, you know, it's incredible to, like, quote the numbers that I'm about to quote and say that it was a great deal for Spurs, but, like, they were only going to have to pay 70 million euros, and he was going to, you know, temper his wage demands from 350,000 pounds a week to 200,000 pounds a week, you know? And that's, like, considered a great deal for this guy. And it would have just been incredible.
Yeah.
Like him and Harry Kane. Oh my God.
Yeah, I know. I was looking back. He finished in 2016-17 season. He finished sixth in the UEFA Player of the Year voting. And that was two spots ahead of Mbappe. I mean, I was behind the usual suspects like Ronaldo and Messi and Luka Modric and guy like that. But it's a mega talented player.
Yeah, it's Ronaldo that actually was his undoing. Like, the reason why he wasn't very good last year, like, in terms of statistics and why he was unhappy and why we had the opportunity to get him was because of Ronaldo being there. That he, like, you know, Ronaldo upset the apple cart in Turin. Yeah.
Well, we'll wrap this thing up. Again, you're listening to the Dustin McComas Show on the Yak.com, episode 11. I'm with Chuck Hoffman, who is the chairperson. He is the Daniel Levy of the Austin Spurs group. Final prediction. Can this team potentially win the league, or is it a top four type team? You know, the Champions League run was just so incredible because it was like Tottenham was on fumes, and it was just like they kept getting results when you think that it was like low chance to get that result. And then they were kind of in a group, like the competition they played was top notch. So, what are you thinking in terms of the league title race and then also Champions League as well?
Yeah. So, well, the Champions League draw doesn't come out for like another few weeks. I mean, I assume that we'll make it through the group stages because we're in pot two. So that means that we'll get a favorable draw, hopefully, and make it through to the round of 16. In terms of the league, I was just talking about this with a few of my friends. You know, I would probably say our chances of winning the league would be like maybe 20% at best. I just think, you know, Liverpool and Manchester City are so talented. They do have, you know, squads that they didn't really replenish either of them, but I don't really think there was a need to. Both teams had over 90 points last year, which was incredible. And, you know, I think that those two teams are far and away the favorites. I would say that we're pretty comfortable at number three. I don't really think Manchester United did much to get better. Chelsea couldn't buy any players. And I, you know, the Scum, they just, oh my God, they signed David Luiz today. And I'm so happy with that guy.
That's going to be so weird to see him in that.
Yeah.
Like, that just came so out of left field. I couldn't believe it.
Apparently they were in for, I'm trying to think. There's like another defender that they were in for, and then they opted to just get him. From what I understand, they do have a French kid coming in next year that they bought on loan, or they bought and then loaned him back. And he's supposed to be very good. But, you know, I think David Luiz might just be there for a year. What they did also, they definitely did like make or break. You know, if they don't finish top four, they have like all of these sort of, you know, terrible contracts that are going to explode. The biggest of which is Mesut Ozil.
Right.
You know, the guy doesn't run anymore, and he's getting paid $350 a week.
Yeah, I would comfortably say
that we'll finish third. But I think there's a chance we could win. I'm definitely going to use $100 of Austin Spurs club funds to put a bet down that we'll win the league. I just consider that as like party insurance, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. That's good use of club funds. Like, you know. Yeah,
I know.
There's a potential for a extreme celebratory party. Like, that's more than worth it.
So I don't know what the odds are, but I think it'd be like worth it. I mean, I know the odds of us winning the Champions League, just that match was like 3-1. I think I'd put down like $250 collectively through a bunch of people. And we're just going to like, you know, if you put down $20, it means you could drink for $60 if we want or something like that. Yeah. There was a way we rationalized it. I do think that there's a good chance that we'll win a trophy this year, one of the domestic cups. Because I do feel like if we don't sell Christian Eriksen, we have a very deep team and could compete for, you know, other trophies like the FA Cup or the League Cup. But, you know, Daniel Levy doesn't really value those things because they don't really pay the money.
Yeah.
You know, from the Champions League, I think we made £50 million this year, which was enough to buy Tanga and Dembele. Like, that's essentially what we did with the money from Champions League.
So, money will spin, I say.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm at third right now. I think that if everything went right,
correct,
they would have a legitimate chance to potentially win the league. But it's just Man City and Liverpool are still clearly in that top tier. But yeah, you mentioned it, that the depth is going to make this season just very, very interesting, because they're going to be in play for so many things, because they've really gone out and addressed the depth. And like you said, if Eriksen hangs around, you know, suddenly you've got not just depth, but you've got really, really quality depth. You know, I know Llorente had his moment in Champions League, but I call him the Spanish Sean Bradley, because he would just kind of – it would drive me nuts when he would be the guy that's like, that's your firepower at the forward position coming off the bench. It's like, oh, my gosh.
He's better than Sean Bradley.
Yeah, oh, yes. Yeah, I know. But, he won back. I felt kind of bad when, you know, he had those moments in the Champions League where it's like, all right, you're coming in. We're going to bomb you long balls down the field. You're going to try to win headers for somebody else and just make some things happen. And then, of course, he had the goal off the corner as well. But, I think.
So to that vein, I would call him the Spanish Robert Ori.
Robert, yeah. Has he won a bunch of titles? I don't, like, I'm trying to
think. Oh, probably not. Yeah,
I'm trying to think of his history before that. Yeah, you know, he's a guy that oddly popped up in transfer discussion.
Maybe Sam Cassell then.
There you go. Sam Cassell, one of my favorite Rockets of all time. Met him at a sports bar during his rookie season. And he played NBA Jam with me, which is a moment that I will never forget.
That's incredible.
Yeah. I grew up a huge Florida State football fan, still am. And he obviously went to Florida State, and him and, somebody else showed up at
Charlie
this,
Ward.
Yeah, he showed up at this, sports bar in North Houston called SRO. And I was just playing NBA Jam, and these guys come up and they're like, hey, you know, mind if we play? And like, I'm looking up, and I'm like, oh my gosh. And I was like, telling my dad, like, dad, it's Sam Cassell. And he was like, yeah, I know. So yeah, they signed some things and took a picture and played NBA Jam. So he's always had a very, very special place in my sports heart. So
what were the guys on that team? Was it Bobby Surra and Charlie Ward? Were those the guys, or was that before or after?
Charlie Ward was around that time, because he won the Heisman in football in 93. And so I think Surra was after. I think Surra was like 96, 97, and whereas Cassell and Ford would have been around the same time. But the Rockets had a weird you know, monopoly of Florida State guards. There's like barely any of them that played basketball, and a couple of them ended up on the Rockets. But Charlie Ward and Sam Cassell. He was easy to grow up a Florida State football fan, because they didn't really lose ever, which helps things.
Except with the field goal kicker.
Yeah, we don't really bring that up. That's a good way to get me to start cracking Lone Stars. I
I think there was a wide, I think it was the wide left, the first wide left, was on my birthday, and I skipped the SAT to watch the game, and they had wide left at Miami, and it was just, I was in a very, very bad place.
How good was college football in the 90s? It was so awesome.
It was incredible. It was incredible. But you had like all of the elite, many of the elite programs were either really, really good consistently, or they had moments when they had really, really good players. Like even Texas, like, wasn't great.
Ricky Williams.
You know, Michigan had their moments when they were really good. Nebraska with Tommy Frazier, of course, Miami, Florida, Florida State. USC had Keyshawn Johnson, and, you know, Carson Palmer later in the 90s and stuff like that. But Ohio State was really, really good as well. Like it was a really great time for college football. And now it's like Clemson and Alabama, and everybody's just trying to play a little catch up right now. So hopefully for my mental health and professional sake, the Texas football team continues to improve and win some games this year, which makes my job a lot more easy. Well,
yeah,
I guess that's about it, man. I appreciate the time. I'm excited for the season. I'm glad that we, man, the Hurricane Harvey stuff was, I knew a little bit about it, but just to hear that in detail, what a special thing to be a part of, and just
it's by far one of the coolest things I've ever done. Like, I'm getting goosebumps right now, just like, game. That was so cool.
I think it's a great representation of just a camaraderie of, you know, how welcoming the group is, and you know, I remember my first time going there, like getting a free Lone Star and meeting people and stuff like that. It's definitely, for those of you that are listening, it's if you're a Spurs supporter or fan, or if you're getting in the Premier League, I encourage you, just show up to Mr. Champs for a match, and I guarantee you, you're going to have a good time. You're going to meet some people. You're gonna hear some interesting stories, and you're gonna have a really, really good time. So with that, we will wrap up episode 11 of the Dustin McComas Show on theyak.com. I'm Dustin McComas. Thank you, a big thank you to Chuck Hoffman, chairperson of the Austin Spurs, for joining me. Chuck, I hope to see you on Saturday. And here's to what hopefully is going to be another very, very successful ride for the Spurs.
I can't wait.
Yeah, so very much looking forward to it. And it already started with an Audi Cup trophy, so that's not going to be the last piece of trophy that those guys lift this year.
One of my friends was like, we're going to win the double. We're going to win the League Cup. I think the League Cup is like a really terrible name this year. The Audi Cup and the League Cup. You know?
It's like, I remember I retweeted that photo, and I was like, oh, first of many haters. Here they come, the trophies. You guys better get it now. You know, get your Spursies jokes in now. But thank you so much, Chuck. I appreciate it, man. I hope to see you on Saturday.
Awesome, man. I'll talk to you later.
All righty.